I mean, I think the term attachment is really overused, and infant attachment, it's about developing a secure relationship with the person that is going to provide you with the most care, and that endures through your lifetime. And it's the infant attaching to the parent.
So what sort of practices or communications are we talking about in this instance where this attachment is initially developed?
Yeah, a lot of parents just do it naturally. It's about being present, and it's about being responsive and sensitive to the infant's needs, and being able to keep the infant in the parent's mind, to think about what it might feel like for the infant. You know, if an infant is distressed, what does that feel like for the infant? Rather than just thinking, oh, it's difficult and I don't like hearing the crying and you know, the infant's trying to get at me.
How does this attachment change over that period of infancy? Because like you were saying there, it's a number of different things which take place over that time. You know, it's responding to whether the baby's crying, even whether they're smiling, and developing that attachment. In those formative years, how does that attachment evolve?
Well, it just evolves naturally, and whether it's strong or whether it's a bit more disconnected or insecure. But my preference is not to talk about attachment with parents. I don't think that it achieves very much, because it's just really theoretical words and language. And for me, it's about looking at developing a good relationship between you and your baby. And if you focus on the relationship, because it's a baby's first love affair, with their parent. And if you focus on that rather than thinking on, you know, oh, is this a secure attachment or an insecure attachment, which is really complicated work, and I certainly would never label someone, a parent, as having a secure attachment, their infant having a secure attachment or an insecure attachment. You really have to be very skilled at judging those attachments, and you can't do that, you know, until into the first year of the child's life anyway. For parents, it's about thinking about the relationship and what a good relationship is. And, you know, there are things that parents can do, you know, like looking at the infant in their eyes, being present. If a baby cries, you know, really responding fairly quickly to the baby, taking the time to talk to the baby. We know that talking to a baby really is very powerful and really helps them develop their language skills, which then helps them, you know, transition to school. So those sorts of things for me are much more important than worrying about attachment.
So it's about ensuring or creating that emotional and physical connection between the parent and the child.
Absolutely. And it's often really hard for parents, because parents, you know, they're doing something that's very new. They're often quite anxious about the baby, because it's a huge responsibility having a baby. And often babies don't respond the way that parents think they're going to respond, or the way they've been told that babies respond, you know, from the media. So their expectations are a bit skewed compared to what's going to happen with the baby.
And one of those situations might be where the parent would see the child being overly reliant on the parent or overly attached. What are those situations like, and how does the parent normally try to deal with those situations?
Yeah, in the first year of life particularly, I worry when people are concerned about the baby being overly attached. I mean, that's what parents are there for. In the first year of life, the parents act as the baby's regulation system. So the baby looks to the parent, to their face, to see that they're safe. So, you know, if they're in a crowded shopping centre, it's really important, if possible, that the baby can see the parent's face. So, you know, for instance, you would turn the baby around in a pouch rather than having it out, facing outwards, so the baby can see the parent can reassure the baby. You know, having it on their back is fine as well, because the baby has a sense of being able to connect with the parent, where when they're facing outwards, they can't do that. And babies are very sophisticated, both learners but also communicators. Babies have lots of cues that they give parents. And we know that parents that are seem to be sort of natural parents and manage parenting fairly easily often are tuning in to the subtle engagement and disengagement cues of a baby. And so they get in early before a baby has to accelerate to a potent disengagement cue like crying. Babies come with these cues, and they, as I said, they're subtle and there's potent ones. And their engagement cues, which says, I want to play, come and be with me. And so that's very obvious things like smiling and reaching out for the parent. They're really potent engagement cues. There are a whole lot less engagement cues than disengagement cues. As parents, we're much smarter at picking up the engagement cues, the smiles, than we are at the disengagement cues. So there's subtle and there's potent disengagement cues. So a cry is a really potent disengagement cue.
And talking about feeding and sleeping in particular, I guess when it comes to the parent trying to help the child and then also have them perhaps sleep in another room is when it might become an issue. And so there's a number of different things can happen, or that the parent can do, different methods or such. And there's one that where there's a lot of talk about called parental presence.
Yes.
So can you just explain a little more about what that is and how it's used in practice?
In the early months of having a baby, and even, you know, up to 12 months, absolutely, and often in toddlerhood, it's absolutely fine for the baby to sleep in the parents' room. You know, and lots of parents find that that's, and culturally that's absolutely fine. But if the parents decide it's time to get the child into their own room, and, you know, even in when they're sharing the room, often children don't want to go down to sleep because the parents are not there. So it's about being there, and it's about, you know, having a physical contact with the baby, your hand on the baby, a vocal contact with the baby so that, you know, you're making soothing sounds to the baby. You can do that and then gradually withdraw. Atrasilian sleeping and set and feeding issues are the main reason why parents come in. I have concerns about lots of sort of prescriptive ways of doing things. I think we have to read the baby, and certainly Tresillian, that's the shift that we're getting the nurses, and the nurses are doing that, is about educating the parents about the cues of the baby and what's the baby saying to you. It's also about thinking about the child's state of consciousness, and there are six states that we all have. And so, you know, the baby is really deeply asleep, which is a non-REM state. There's no movement of their eyes. Then there's a REM state, which is rapid eye movement. And then there's drowsiness. And then there's quiet alert. And then there's active alert. A baby, when they're in the really deep, deep sleep of non-REM eye movement sleep, a good way to think about that is if you've ever taken a toddler in a car and they've fallen asleep and you've picked them out of the car and they're often really deeply asleep, and you can move them into their cot without anything. You could turn them upside down and they wouldn't wake up. You know, they're just so deeply asleep. They're like a rag doll. That's a non-REM sleep. Rapid eye movement sleep is when they are very lightly asleep, and it's just a part of the cycle that, and we go through this as well. We as adults often put quite a few sleep cycles together, and we actually wake up in the middle of the night and we don't even know we've done that, and we fall back to sleep. And so we have, you know, a whole lot of sleep cycles, and our sleep cycles are about 90 minutes. And babies, you know, might do one or two cycles or only one cycle during the day when they're put down for their sleep periods, and then they wake up. And as they get older, there's more consolidation, so they learn to put more sleep cycles together.